Fasten your chin strap and get ready for the snap. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
The Eric Ainge Show rolls on all of our, or both of our stations. We appreciate everybody joining us here in the Tri-Cities on the Sports Monster, and of course right here in Knoxville on the Sports Animal, around the world on our app and our websites as well. Eric Ainge broadcasting live from Maryland, where you guys went to quarantine with the extended fam up in Maryland. Everybody doing well up there?
Yeah, we're hanging out. Our Amanda's parents' house has a giant yard where, and there's a pond where you can catch bass, a four-wheeler, BB guns, and a ton of space to just do stuff. We just don't have enough space at our house to do all that, so we figured we'd just come up here and stay at that house instead of staying at our house.
We'll quarantine together for a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about the SEC's dominance of the NFL draft coming up here in a little bit, because a lot of mock drafts have a lot of SEC players in that first round. And obviously the SEC has the best player available, projected number one pick Joe Burrow. Who is second on that list? Kirby Smart whining. Basically, they're beyond the NFL. There's a lot of coaches in college football that have said a lot of dumb things in the last couple days, so we're going to give you all of it here on the Eric Ainge Show. But let's go into the NFL draft, Eric, with what the SEC and particularly the SEC defenses are doing. As we look at a lot of mock drafts, there's a lot of SEC flavor and a lot of it on defense coming up this year.
So I was looking at a mock draft yesterday, and it's the player, the position they play, the school they went to, and then the projection to the NFL team that has that draft pick. In that 32, there's 32 teams. In the 32-pick first-round mock draft for this upcoming draft, 2020 NFL draft, there were 17 defensive players. So, that's a little more than half. There were 5 corners, 4 defensive ends, 4 linebackers, 3 defensive tackles, and 1 safety. Of those 17 defensive players, how many of them do you think come from the SEC?
At least 10.
9. So 9 of the 17, over half of the players that are projected first-round draft picks, come from the SEC, from 5 different schools. So here's where it really skews, and this is why the SEC is just so much better. In the mock draft, the Big Ten was the next best. They had 4 schools and 5 projected defensive players. One from Iowa, one from Wisconsin, 2 from Ohio State, and 1 more who I forget. Oh, Penn State. 1 from Penn State. So there were 4 schools and 5 players in the mock draft. The ACC, how many schools do you think the ACC was represented? Which school?
Clemson.
Clemson. That's the only one. Clemson.
The answer to any ACC question right now is 1, Clemson.
Yep, 1 school, 2 projected first-round picks out of the ACC on defense this year. The Big 12, 1 school. Which school do you think it was in the Big 12?
Oklahoma.
1 school, 1 player. 0 Pac-12 projected first-round defensive picks, and 0 from other conferences. No Notre Dame, no small schools, anything like that. So I looked at that, and I was like, man, the SEC has over half the players, and the other 4 power conferences combined, Power 5 conferences, the other 4 conferences combined have 6 schools total that are represented in getting one of their defensive players drafted in the first round in the mock draft. The SEC by itself has 5 schools. So it's the SEC is comparable to all of the other 4 Power 5 conferences combined. which is crazy. And that's why this league is so good. So then I went back and looked at the 2019 actual draft. And this, I think, is what you could see this year, too, because there's a lot of really good players at similar positions. In 2019, in the first round last year, there were 8 defensive ends drafted. 8. And it's because once one goes, when you have a deep class, when one goes, they all start going. 8 defensive ends, 5 defensive tackles. There were 13 defensive linemen drafted in the 2019 first round of the NFL draft. 13. There's only 32 picks. There were 2 linebackers, 2 safeties, and a corner. 18 total. Again, we just said in the mock draft for this upcoming draft, there were 17 defensive players. There's 18 actual drafted defensive players. So that's on par with what's normal. How many SEC schools do you think were represented last year getting first-round draft picks?
I'm trying to...
In the mock draft, there were 5 schools in this upcoming mock draft.
I'll say there were 4 last year.
5 schools.
Really?
Last year as well. Yep.
Mississippi State did have a player.
State had 3. Kentucky had 1. Alabama, LSU, and... I don't remember the other one.
Georgia?
The other... Georgia...
Did Georgia not have a defensive player?
Maybe. I don't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. 5 schools, and there were 7 players drafted. 7 first-round draft picks on defense from the SEC. The Big Ten had 4. The ACC had 4. The Big 12 had 1. And the Pac-12 had 0. The Pac-12 has not had a defensive player drafted in the first round in years. You want to know why the conference isn't any good? It's because that's what makes your conference deep. That's what makes playing in the SEC. It drives me crazy when I hear other people talk about this conference or that conference. And the Big Ten's the only one that could even mount an argument that I would be willing to entertain. And even then, it's not the same. The amount of defensive players that are drafted total from the SEC every year dwarfs all the other conferences combined. It's crazy. And then you look at the first round. So you're looking at primo, the best of the best, your franchise-changing caliber defensive players. There were 7 of them from 5 schools last year, and there's a projected 9 of them from 5 schools this year. And some of their different schools. You know, this year Auburn's going to have a top 10 pick. On defense, D-tackle Derek Brown. You know, it's just there's so many good defensive players, and that's what I remember from playing in this league. I remember playing in NFL preseason games against the really good teams, and early in the game when they still had a lot of their starters out there, most of their starters. And I remember doing an interview after the game, and one of the reporters was like, "Wow, what was that like?" And I was like, "That was like playing an average SEC team." I'm not, and they kind of looked at me. They're like, right, "Give me a different answer," and probably a good thing. But I remember being like, "Man, I game planned against 5 teams that were better on defense, team defense, team speed, than the team we played tonight."
Yeah.
And it's because as soon as they leave, you know, like last year, how many defensive players on LSU's defense are going to be NFL draft picks, high NFL draft picks, on defense? I mean. All of them. They're going to have a corner, a D end, a linebacker just in this class. They'll have another defensive tackle, a corner. I mean, they're just littered. It's like watching old school LSU, you know, 2009, 10, 11 LSU, Alabama, where every player on the defense for those two teams is a first, second, or third round draft pick, most of which first round draft picks. They just aren't all eligible at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's. Yeah, that's why the defense, the SEC is dominant, and that's why I think you'll see a showing this draft. You'll see a lot of SEC defensive players going in the first round.
And that shows the dominance of the league and why the league stays dominant, because if you have a defense that is NFL caliber, which many of these schools do, it's tough for any offenses to gain traction against that. If you're trying to build up, it's a lot easier to try to do that with offense, and that's why there's not a lot of upward mobility for schools once you get into that top 5 in the SEC. it's tough to claw past those other teams because they have NFL defenses that they're rolling out. It's why Tennessee won a national championship in 1998 with nearly every player on it played somewhere in the NFL.
I'll give you an example. We've had two guys here in the recent Tennessee football past that if while they were in school playing here at UT, I would have told you that Emmanuel Moseley would be a starter and widely regarded as the better cover guy playing opposite Richard Sherman in a Super Bowl in his first year in the NFL, what would you say?
Absolutely not.
Give me a break. If I'd have told you that Justin Coleman would be a free agent commodity and a starter for the Patriots.
Absolutely not.
Not a chance. And these guys were SEC average, run-of-the-mill SEC DBs. And here's the thing, they weren't, but there's so many good defensive backs in the SEC that they were subpar on subpar teams with high ceilings and average coaching. But I mean, that's those guys go to the NFL and they're great. Imagine if Emmanuel Moseley or Justin Coleman played in the Big 12 or the Pac-12, they would have been first team all conference and drafted. Instead, they're undrafted free agents making rosters. I mean, the undrafted free agent SEC defensive guys make rosters and play forever. It's just that is the number one reason why the SEC is so good.
And you're going to see it through draft night. You're going to see it all the way through there. But it also was a big hurt to the people. And, you know, we have a few of them that interact with us here locally that are from other conferences. Well, the SEC isn't really all that much better than everybody else. Well, they are, and draft night shows it. And draft night always shows it. Welcome back here on the Eric Haines Show, 656-9900, if you want to join us and talk about the NFL draft. 866-656-9900. It's the Eric Haines Show.
Illinois.
You're dialed in here to the EA Show with Brian Rice. That's the Eric Haines Show, brought to you by Mortgage Investors Group. Talking a little NFL draft right now. Obviously, we all know who the number one pick of the draft is going to be. That's going to be LSU quarterback, former Ohio State Buckeye transfer Joe Burrow. Going to go back home to his home state of Ohio and be a Bengal. But after that, the conversation shifts to two generational athletic freak defensive players.
I think Chase Young is the next one, but right there with it is Isaiah Simmons.
So, you know, I think I have a different opinion on these two guys than a lot of people do. First off, I wouldn't fight you if you gave me either one of them. You know what I mean? Like, great. Either one of them immediately makes you a better defensive football team. But I think I value the versatility that Isaiah Simmons has from Clemson, the linebacker from Clemson, with his size, length, and speed, and his ability to play multiple positions. He can rush the edge. He can rush internally. He can play a line, just straight up middle backer. He can play outside backer. He could play in the nickel. They've even put him at safety. I mean, he's an athletic freak. I don't even remember a player like that was that different and could do that many different things. That kid out of Michigan a couple years ago was kind of like this, but he was more of a safety that could be a linebacker. Isaiah Simmons, to me, I would value more for my football team than Chase Young, who I think can only play outside. Yeah, I mean, he's a defensive end, and he could stand up and rush in a 3-4, play head up on the tackle, or a four-down defensive end. He's not going to line up inside. I think he's too long, and his moves aren't burst and bull rushy enough. He's better on the edge against a tackle in space. And he's a freak at that, man. I mean, he is. He's Clowney-esque coming off the edge. but I think I value Simmons' versatility a little bit more. That's not going to happen. I mean, it's Chase Young's going to get drafted second. But I don't know.
Okay, is Chase Young a good enough player that if you need a dominant defensive player, you are willing to move up in the draft to get him?
Yeah, I mean, for sure he is. If you're just one, we watched last year, and we've seen it through the entirety of the game of football that we've been watching. If you have one great defensive lineman, great, cool. We're going to block him with two guys. No big deal. Because two of my guys are better than your one. Even if your one is all world, he's not better than two of mine. So that doesn't really present you any problems. You know, when we talk about the guys, the players, it's what effect does their presence on the field have on the other team from a preparation, game plan, play calling standpoint. And if you only have Nick Bosa coming off the edge and you don't have D Ford on the other side, then you can block Nick Bosa. But if you have D Ford on the other side, you can't block Nick Bosa, really, or D Ford. If you have a player that requires more than one hat, as we call them, in the blocking scheme, then you lose the numbers game offensively immediately. You have to try to account for their ability with play calling and different type of things. You got to try to slow them down with screen plays and some misdirection stuff, a trap block every once in a while and hit them in, ear hole them. I don't even know. You can't do that anymore, but that's how we used to slow defensive ends down. We'd start, we'd take Chris Brown, and he was our H-back, like a tight end, fullback type guy, and we'd line him up outside. And if the linebacker ran out there, then I knew it was man-to-man, which was even better. But it didn't really matter on most plays because we'd motion him back in like he was coming into the slot right there on the boundary by the tackle, and there'd be a defensive end standing right there. And if that defensive end was an edge rush nightmare, we'd run a little toss sweep, toss crack play where Chris would come down and the tackle would quick set and then block down and leave the guy unblocked because you can't, you don't want to get a penalty. But Chris would just come down and ear hole the guy. And then for the rest of the game, that defensive end is peeking over there to see if there's someone coming to trap him and hit him in the ear again. It just, you got to find different ways with play calling and blocking schemes. If you have one more than one guy on your team that's a pass rush problem, and God forbid you have a guy on each outside and one guy internally, then you can't. It's good luck, because you don't have to blitz to pressure the quarterback. You're going to wreak havoc. You're going to change plays. There's no blocking scheme that can actually effectively account for all of them. So you're going to have a lot of one-on-one opportunities for your guys against their best players. And it's pretty much clockwork. Those defensive guys are better athletes. We can all agree on that. From a just pure athleticism standpoint, an NFL defensive end is way more athletic than the tackle that's blocking him. And if you are just letting them go one-on-one because there's a guy on the other side. So you add Chase Young to the Redskins defense, and they're good. They're real good on D. They already have a good defensive line. They'd be ridiculous. If you already have a good defensive line, if that's you and you draft Isaiah Simmons, holy cow. I mean, Simmons allows you to have an entire another player on your roster because of all the versatility he brings to your roster. So there's value there. You're almost getting a 2-for-1 when you draft Isaiah Simmons. So, I mean, either way, you can't lose with either one of these guys. But, I think that I like Isaiah Simmons and his unique ability a little bit more. I don't know that I would draft him before I would draft Chase Young. It would depend on the makeup of my team. But I just would have a hard time watching that kid run around and not want him on my team.
Are any of the if you're looking for a quarterback, is Joe Burrow can't miss enough that you would do a Mike Ditka Saints for Ricky Williams and give up your whole draft to go get him?
I think so. I think Joe Burrow played the single best full season of college football quarterback that has ever been played. Think about that. What Joe Burrow did last year at LSU, going undefeated and breaking all those records against all the top 10 and 15 teams they played, their schedule was ridiculous, and his numbers were incredible. And it's not like he was just getting all this yak from his guys and making these little dink and dunk throws. I mean, his poise and his ability under pressure to adapt and be smart with the football, only giving his guys a chance or nobody, you can win immediately with Joe Burrow. And then his decision-making, he understood what they were trying to accomplish better than any quarterback I think I've seen in college football in any time recent. They had an answer for everything, and he was, I mean, it was really, really impressive watching what he did last year. He's an underrated athlete. He's incredibly intelligent. He's been well-groomed and trained at the quarterback position. So going into Cincinnati, he'll be day one in the rookie minicamp meeting room. He'll be light years ahead of where they even think he is. And then there's all the fun stuff, like that's where he's from and whatever. That doesn't really matter. We're talking about the NFL. This is a job. But I think Joe Burrow is a for sure franchise quarterback. And barring anything crazy, I mean, the kid's never been hurt. That's the other thing. I mean, he's durable. He's strong. I think he could be a guy. He's a future NFL all-star potential champion candidate for. I mean, I don't think there's anything that's out of the realm of conversation with what his career could end up being. That being said, I think Tua is a can't-miss prospect as well, but I don't think he's as much of a guarantee that he will be successful as Joe Burrow.
Okay, if you're the general manager of the Cincinnati Bengals, and a franchise comes up and says, we'll give you every pick in the draft that we have this year for your number one overall so we can take Joe Burrow, do you take that trade?
I wouldn't. I think Joe Burrow is really that guy. I mean, Andrew Luck was that guy. Peyton Manning was that guy. Cam Newton wasn't. Jamarcus Russell wasn't. Matt Stafford wasn't. To me, you know, where it's just like a guarantee. I don't care where he goes, he's going to be good, and his career will be good. He will make the franchise into a legitimate competitive franchise. That's how good I think Joe Burrow could be. And that's rare. I really think the last guy that came out that I felt like that about was Andrew Luck. Honestly, I don't think there's been a guy since that I've just looked at and said, guarantee for sure, no questions, have to draft him if you have a chance. So I would say no if I was the Bengals, but if I was anybody else, if someone came to me with to the Redskins and said, hey, we need Chase Young or whoever's going to draft Tua, maybe the Dolphins at 5. If someone went to the Dolphins and said, we'll give you all of our draft for your 5th pick of the draft, or they went to whoever's before them and did the same exact thing, that to me, I think, would be a mistake. I think the way to win in the NFL is with defense, special teams, and a good running game, a solid offense, and a managing quarterback. That's the way to get to, the 49ers route is the way to get to the Super Bowl, because the only way you're getting there if you don't go that route is if you have a Hall of Fame quarterback, i.e. the Chiefs, the Packers, the Saints, the now Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There's only a few of them playing that I would say, don't go build the team with defensive line defense and offensive linemen. You need to start it with the quarterback. I think Joe Burrow is the guy you start with at the quarterback position, and that doesn't come around very often. People draft guys in the first round and really high because they need quarterbacks, and that's just the best guy that's available, and they try to convince themselves that they're going to be better than they are. Like, whoever drafts Justin Herbert is wasting a draft pick. Straight up wasting a draft pick. I don't think he's going to be any good in the NFL.
Put that down on Old Takes Exposed. We'll come back here on the Eric Haines Show. More on the NFL draft coming up in the coming days, because it is the biggest sports event that will happen this month, and we will have plenty of coverage of it, as well as full mock drafts from so many of our experts right now online at 991thesportsanimal.com. We return next. Kirby Smart, Eric Haines, has gotten on his whiny high horse. We'll tell you what he said next on the Eric Haines Show.
You're listening to the Eric Haines Show. If you're up in the Tri-Cities, you're on AM 640, the Sports Monster, 99.1, the Sports Animal. Maybe online, podcasting it. Who knows? I don't even care how you listen. Just glad you are listening right now. Brian, did you see what Peyton Manning has done recently?
He's been buying meals for entire ER staffs, correct?
Yeah, so for every employee in an Indianapolis hospital, I don't know which one, but you know there's tons of employees, even at a small hospital, which I don't think this was. He bought every one of them, every single employee, a St. Elmo's steak dinner. And I've never been to St. Elmo's, but based on their Twitter, it looks like a really swanky, expensive, really nice steakhouse. He bought every single employee of the hospital a steak dinner.
Wow.
That's crazy, man.
That is incredible, but a great
Peyton
stuff.
Manning.
No surprise from him.
I would like to think that if I had the financial situation that Peyton Manning did, I would like to think that I would do the exact same thing. Wouldn't you? If you had all that, if you had that kind of money, wouldn't you do Peyton Manning type stuff?
Absolutely.
I don't know that I would give $1 billion to coronavirus efforts like the CEO of Twitter is doing.
Well, he's got it.
I'd get a billion, though. No one's ever given a billion.
Bill Gates gave.
Bill Gates, you're right. Bill Gates. Yeah. Bill, there's one. There's one guy.
Yeah. Well, that's not crazy. Everybody. There aren't very many people that are that rich. Warren Buffett's given a lot of. He's given billions, but not.
Yeah, that's true.
Cause necessarily. Kirby Smart's trying to get there. Kirby Smart went all in on the Paul Feinbaum show late last week, saying that it was not fair that some teams got to have more spring practice than he did. Quote, "I think if everybody didn't have it, it probably wouldn't bother me as bad. But, you know, we got a new offensive coordinator, a new quarterback coming in, whoever it's going to be, and to not get those practices, boy, that's tough. I think we got three or four practices. Some of the SEC teams got in more than that before we shut everything down. In the grand scheme of things, that's not a lot, but I certainly think some young players, some mid-year guys that came in thinking they were going to get a leg up on people, that may not be as big a leg as they thought because they weren't able to have those practices." He went on to criticize, to be critical of teams that were able to get more practices in because they started earlier. I think you're right, though. This is just somebody who is very stressed out and doesn't know how to express that in a healthy manner.
So
it's tough because he's coming in and trying to put in a new system, new quarterback, and all that. So I understand him being stressed.
No, and that's why we had the whole conversation that we've had, and we can have it again sometime. What the effect will be on some of the teams, because it's going to affect some teams more than others. It just is. Some teams don't know who the quarterback is. They don't know who the left tackle is going to be. They don't know who this guy, that guy. I mean, when you have a lot to replace, even if you just get to reload with other 4- and 5-star players, that doesn't mean they're all going to play at a 4- or 5-star level the first time you trot them out there. You know what I mean? So you have to be prepared, and the only way to do that is to practice and to get it on tape and see where you're at. It looks like they started spring practice on March 17th, which was a week before Tennessee, on March 24th. So Alabama started on the 13th. Arkansas on the 16th, Auburn on the 10th, Florida on the 16th, Georgia on the 17th. So within a few days of most of these teams, Kentucky and LSU started a week before that. They started on March 7th. Ole Miss was March 3rd. So those teams definitely got a few more practices in, but Mississippi State didn't. South Carolina didn't. Tennessee didn't. Texas A&M did. And Vanderbilt actually ended practice on March 21st. They started on February 16th. So Vandy's the team that really made out. You know, Vandy, Kentucky, LSU, and Ole Miss. Vandy, Kentucky, Ole Miss, LSU, and A&M. Those teams got significantly more practice time than all the other ones. But Georgia's right in the middle of the pack. I mean, he doesn't really have anything to complain about.
No, he's frustrated because he definitely, they needed this. And he's gone on to say how much they needed it with a new quarterback, with a new OC. They could be the team that's most hurt in the SEC by this whole situation. And, well, to be frank with you, I'm here for it.
I mean, Kirby Smart's biggest opponent right now in the SEC, wouldn't you say it's Alabama and Florida, and maybe Alabama, LSU, and Florida?
Yeah.
Because he's got to be better than Florida to get to the game, and then he's got to be better than whatever team he's going to play. So if you look at Alabama, they might have got one more practice than Georgia. Florida started the day before, so they got the same amount of practices as Georgia. Tennessee started after Georgia, so we got less practice than them. And LSU started a week and a half before them. The only team that Kirby Smart could even complain about a little bit would be the fact that LSU started 10 days before them, probably got three practices in more than Georgia did. That's literally it.
Yeah. And it's
he's just stressed out, man. I mean, it is what it is. We've been talking about, you've been sharing all the things that all these coaches are saying. Mike Leach, dumb tweets, saying things he shouldn't be saying already. Mike Gundy, every time he talks, I mean, you mentioned his 21-minute opening press conference rant that he went on. Dabo's talking about his travels and this and flying and going on vacation. Dabo doesn't have a worry in the world. He's talking about going on vacation. Kirby's complaining about practice. He's stressed out. Gundy's trying to mandate that they go back when they're not legally allowed to. You know, he's stressed out. I mean, you can just tell who's feeling it based on how they sound right now.
All right, welcome back here on the Eric Haines Show, 656-9900 if you want to join us. Sensitivity training is coming for the aforementioned Mike Leach. I'll tell you what that encompasses next on the Eric Haines Show.
It done.
Welcome back to the Eric Haines Show, 656-9900 if you want to join us. A lot of coaches are freaking out right now, Brian.
Mike Leach, I wouldn't even say that he freaked out and did this. He is just on brand himself. But John Cohen, Mississippi State Athletics Director, yesterday said that Mike Leach is going to, quote, expand his cultural awareness of Mississippi following his tweet. His tweet last week depicted a woman knitting a noose for her husband during self-quarantine. It was criticized by several Bulldogs players, Fabian Lovitz in the transfer portal. After his father, Abdul Lovett, told the Jackson Clear and Ledger, quote, with a guy like that, we don't feel comfortable playing for him from a leadership standpoint, unquote. Cohen yesterday said this, quote, no matter the context, for many Americans, the image of a noose is never appropriate, and that's particularly true in the South and in Mississippi. Mississippi State University was disappointed in the use of such an image in a tweet by Coach Mike Leach. Continuing, the university is confident that Coach Leach is moving quickly and sincerely past this unintended misstep and will provide the leadership for our student athletes and an excitement for our football program that our fans deserve and that our students and alumni will be proud to support. Unquote. His sensitivity training will include guided tours of the Museum of Mississippi History and the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum once those museums are reopened after the coronavirus.
Did you see what the kid Fabian Lovitz, did you see what his dad said? There, I'll read it real quick. He said, this is Abdul Lovett, the kid who entered the transfer portal because of Mike Leach, because of the tweet that you were just talking about. The kid's dad said, I didn't feel comfortable with my son being down there with a guy like that from a leadership standpoint, that you can just throw anything out there. Abdul told the Clarion Ledger on Saturday. He said, quote, I feel like if he can do it, the kids are going to feel like they can do it. He went on to add, if he were sincere about it, he should have at least called me instead of it being the other way around. At least text my number if you can't call me. He hasn't called, unlike these other coaches who are trying to recruit.
Yeah, not great. Not great. I mentioned what he said about the leadership standpoint.
I don't think that Mike Leach is a racist, and I don't think that Mike Leach, I mean, he's been coaching black kids forever.
I don't think he has any awareness of the world beyond himself, and that's the problem here.
He also is coming from Texas Tech when he wasn't a big enough name or anything yet to get all of the PR, and he didn't have the brand that he has now. He wasn't the pirate yet. That's where it started, but he was more of an offensive, like a niche offensive air raid guru that was a little quirky. Then he goes up to Washington State, and literally no one heard anything Mike Leach said nationally at Washington State, unless it was completely ridiculous. And then even then, it was usually just on social media. So he's coming from years of getting away with saying things and doing things that he probably shouldn't culturally. He's just been doing it for so long that, and no one's heard about it, that now he's in the Southeastern Conference and, God forbid, is tone deaf about something that's very sensitive to really anyone anywhere, but especially down south, especially in Mississippi. So especially in a college football locker room, you know what I mean? Like you can't have made it any worse than that. I really don't think that he meant that he was being a racist at all. I don't, but the fact that he didn't call, He should have called every single one of the parents on that team and apologized.
But he didn't. And he didn't, probably and doesn't understand why he should. And again, well, that's the problem.
Yeah, because he didn't, well, he didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. I always tell my kids, just because it was an accident doesn't mean you don't have to apologize. Well, I didn't mean to elbow her in the face. But did
but
you?
He did.
Yeah. Well, then you need to apologize. It doesn't matter if it was on purpose or not. You still got to say sorry. She still took an elbow to the face. You still got to call the parents and tell them, I'm sorry. That was not my intention. Obviously, I've been coaching and have great relationships, and there's not just white guys on my staff. You know, it's not like he's choosing to work with only white people and recruit white people. I mean, if he was doing something like that, then yeah, I mean, this might be different, but you can't get away with being like that in college football for a day, let alone an entire career. So Mike Leach he's going to Mike Leach like Mike Gundy's going to Mike Gundy. I guarantee if Dan Mullen took the podium and talked like Kirby Smart did, he'd probably sound pretty whiny and complainy as well. I mean, you are who you are no matter where you go. And unfortunately, like we subscribe to on the Eric Gaines Show, you bring yourself with you wherever you go. Mike Leach has, in fact, brought himself to Starkville, Mississippi.
Yeah, and now more people are paying attention to it, because even though Starkville's a very small town, you're playing in a very big sandbox in the SEC where everything you say is going to be scrutinized. And like I said earlier, from what I understand from people down in Mississippi, this is not the first issue that he's had behind the scenes. It is the first thing that has caused a public reprimand, but you know, my prediction is under 4 years. I would adjust that, and I think it's going to be less than that if he's already there. If they win big, maybe he buys himself some time. But this idle time is not helping one Mike Leach. We'll come back. 656-9900 if you want to join us. We start the next hour of the Eric Gaines Show with Over Under next.